tonight I'd like to read a couple excerpts from a short piece I did for Cabot Lecter called China Girl. This was published in the website edition of the magazine, and there's actually a second part, a second story, also called China Girl Part 2, which is coming out in the next print issue of Cabot Lecter. She enjoys visiting her musician friends. Beijingers by birth, they are both guitarists, and they make their home in a Dongzhimen apartment with the color and texture of a well-used ashtray. She snuggles up with a wet bottle of beer and gazes at the steam-cracked walls as they noodle about. The agenda always includes an exact cover of Hotel California, the version from Hell Freezes Over. "You ever write your own songs?" she asks. "Of course," the handsome one snaps. Here, now, he is formidable. But she saw him play once at the Star Shower Cafe during an open mic, and he went all tight and robotic as he improvised a blues tune. She still remembers how he slumped, his stringy hair hiding his face as the bar patrons good-naturedly applauded his timidity and how endearing it was. The handsome one is the leader, but the not-so-handsome one is the better player. Bobbing his head up and down, his glasses prancing on the bridge of his nose, he coaxes machine gun rhythms from his acoustic. Before she can even say Nirvana, the handsome one begins singing in English. She cannot make out the lyrics, but at the beginning of every line, he moans, "Kurt Cobain, Kurt Cobain." She doesn't ask about the song after they have finished, for she knows that the handsome one considers songs a divine gift, something beyond the bounds of explanation. He pops in a VCD of Michael Jackson videos, pre-Thriller days. His early songs are fresher, the not-so-handsome one says in a most earnest tone. "Can't stop till you get enough," Michael sings over and over, and the handsome one passes his cigarette among the three of them. "I hear that Americans treat their dogs well," the handsome one murmurs. His face is fiery from beer. "Clean them all the time, care for them like children, build houses for them. Shit, they even build tombs for them." Swept up with the thought of it, he flops back onto his squeaky board-like bed. "Fuck, I wish I was an American dog." She passes her cigarette to him, and he takes it with long, feminine fingers. She is jealous of those fingers. He puffs distractedly, and after a while, his eyes lock on her, but she is watching the video. The sunset throws orange into the cramped room. Michael sings and dances in place. And even though she now knows he is staring at her, she continues to watch the video. She is surprised to discover she is completely content. This is the third time she has been interviewed by a visa officer. The door to the interview room is slightly ajar, and snatches of conversation from outside infiltrate. An American man is trying to arrange full U.S. citizenship for his Chinese wife. "You should have done this already," she hears someone say. "Why are you even here? Why are you wasting my time? You have to fill this out and have it authorized by the local authorities. It's not my job to do it for you." "Why do you want to go to America?" the visa officer asks. Her current boyfriend from Austin has coached her on the answer, and she speaks fluently, if not flawlessly. This is intentional, for a smoothly recited answer gives the game away. "In my particular field of my study, the best program, feel like I can contribute to scholarly studies not only in China, but in America as well, etc." "I see you've already been accepted at UT Austin," he says. "Good school." This is new to her, this kindness. Her previous interviewer simply scowled, unblinking, as if awaiting any weakness that would manifest itself immediately on her own features. "You want to go to America, you have to prove you have a good reason," he had said. At the end of the interview, he had shaken his head. "Not good enough," he said. And that was that. But now this interviewer is smiling, his breath sweet with coffee, and telling her that her school is good. This is unexpected. She knows that an American smile means nothing, but still she returns it with a shy one of her own, and it is at this moment that she realizes her heart is pounding with excitement. "It's going to work," she realizes. "And they gave you a scholarship," he continues. "That's great." "They are very generous," she says modestly. "This is good, this modest business. You have official permission from your government to go?" She produces the paper. Still, his smile is big and bold and beautiful. Who first described America that way? Did they know how right they were? "And someone has agreed to be your sponsor?" Yes, she has that paper too, signed by her boyfriend, who pilfered the company letterhead from his father's cement factory. "Are you working right now?" "No," she says. Not entirely true. She is working part-time, but she can't talk about the dance club with a man in a suit. Still, he smiles. But wait, now he shakes his head. Smiling and shaking the head? "Your credentials are good," he says, "but..." "No!" she nearly bursts out. She has stood on the street all morning, in line with the dozens of others who have come to the U.S. Embassy for the very same thing. Stamping her feet in the chill, looking down at her shoes for every passerby or local policeman who stared at her, every silent judge of her motives and loyalty to her country. But she stays quiet. She only half hears the rest. Something about limits, quotas. "So many applications, we prefer people who have steady jobs, it means they are earning to support. Difficult to turn away worthy people." She is now standing, shaking a hand, or rather, a hand is shaking her. Through the slightly open door back to the central reception area, head a whirl, she thinks, "I will get this Austin man to marry me. I know I can convince him to do it. He loves me just enough, and then it would be all right." The American man and his Chinese wife are still arguing with the embassy official, who glares from behind the window, his glasses hanging obscenely low under his eyes. "Who the hell do you think you are?" the American man is shouting. "I'm an American citizen!" "I don't care," the official says, and she is taken aback by the venom in his voice. It is completely unlike the rudeness of the street merchants, their offhand cruelty. This is a tone calculated to hurt, like the brutal twist of a knife after it has pierced the victim's heart. The American man is still raging. His wife meets her eyes and looks down on the floor. Already, a Marine guard is at the door, his hand at his sidearm, appraising the situation. He pushes past her with an unnecessary shove, and even as she struggles to regain her balance, even as her momentum takes her out of the room, she laughs once, a hysterical giggle. "What am I thinking?" she wonders. "Why would I marry him?" Thank you very much.